Welcome back to the Smashy Business Show on a Tuesday morning. I'm Farah Bashir.
The 9th of July, and I'm Richard Fitzgerald.
And today we're going to be talking about a really cool stuff. So if you guys, this is for the hustles and the businessmen of Dubai. So we're going to be talking about Dubai's 20-minute city vision drives metro station expansion to 140 stations and Saudi vision 2030 boosted by all-time high of $753 billion in liquidity. And of course, the Trump. Eric Trump announces family's expansion plans in the Middle East. So first of all, good morning to you, Richard.
Hey, Farah. Do you know what I was thinking about this morning is I was watching, you know, yesterday we talked about sport and everything.
Yes.
And I was watching a video of Novak Djokovic at Wimbledon yesterday. He was playing a Scandinavian player, a really good guy called Holger Rune, right? And the crowd in Wimbledon, where he's been for 20 years and Novak's won a lot, the crowd cheer for Rune, but they go, Rune. Oh. So they do it like that, like the chant they do for Ronaldo. But Novak had an outburst at the end of the match.
Okay.
And he basically said that they were using that chant to boo Novak. And he had a big outburst and he criticized, and you don't do that at Wimbledon, like it's so pristine, it's so prestigious. And he criticized the crowd and he said, they're booing me, it's disrespectful. You know, the players try really hard, it's disrespectful. And I was just thinking about it in terms of outbursts and reputation. And something else I was reading today, it reminded me of media and it reminded me of Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith, and when he slapped Chris Rock 3 years ago at an award ceremony, and he came to Dubai to get away from the media attention at the time. But he basically lost a lot of his production business. Westbrook, his wife's show, Red Table, was cancelled by Meta and had a knock-on effect. And they're my thoughts this morning in terms of reputation, outbursts, and things like that. And if you watch the video, we'll put it up on the show notes later. But if you watch the video, you'll see that Novak is visibly upset. And he's not a sore loser because he won the game in 3 sets. But he basically was interviewed on the court afterwards. And he said, good night to the crowd in a booing way to show that you can stretch out words as a way of saying a booing, you know. I think he's doing his reputation harm. And I think he'll have commercial knock-on effect and reputation damage because of how he's expressing his negative emotions publicly like that, rather than navigating the end of his career in a more sophisticated way.
Do you think that when players in sports, and any person really gets booed, do you think that it really affects their performance?
I think obviously fans and support is seen as a positive thing. So the opposite would be seen as a negative. But I think the two true great champions really isolate, because if you're playing a game and you're conscious of the crowd and the arena and the environment, then that's going to affect you positively and negatively. You know, we see a lot of penalty shootouts in the Euros at the moment.
Yeah.
And I saw one psychology analysis of penalty shootouts where after you take the kick, you're supposed to you walk back to your team and it's kind of them against us, and your team are a line of 10 people and their arms around their shoulders. So what the observer of the England team the other night said, what they've done now is a buddy system. So someone leaves the center circle, walks towards the isolated player so he's not on his own, even if he scored, puts his arm around his shoulder and brings him back to the group. And also the group on the center line are no longer arms around shoulders, because it's not them against us. They're loose and they're light. So it's all psychology. But going back to the question, I think, you shouldn't... If people are playing to the crowd, then they're playing the occasion. You should never play the occasion. You should play the opponent. That's just psychology of sport.
I mean, of course, but I feel like as people, that when we get a positive reinforcement of like something that we've done, right? And this applies to players in the sports sector and everywhere, really. It is not as impactful than like one comment of like, hey, you're not good. you're not good enough.
Absolutely. You're totally right. But if you're emotionally aware and you can observe that, and you can, I watched that Inside Out too, mm-hmm. at the weekend, literally for this reason, too, because I was told that it's got emotional intelligence built yes. into it. And it's the second one. So there's four new emotions as the teenager. So basically, it's a Pixar movie. It's animation. And it's done at the story of a young girl in San Francisco. And the first four emotions are the first movie. And then the next four emotions when she's a teenager. And it's, I really like it because it's based around sport. She's going for an ice hockey camp. And the emotion that takes over as she goes into mm-hmm. puberty is anxiety. And the message of the movie at the end is that, you know, all the emotions, fear, anger, anxiety, are all together in joy, you know, but they don't disappear. It's just about having emotion awareness. Like, it's not about, I thought it, and Hams, my better half, explained to me that it wasn't just joy overcoming everything. It's actually about having all those emotions together. So if someone does say, hey, Rich, you're not that good at this, and if I let that really get to me, that's not really being emotionally intelligent. I should be able to compartmentalize that and not let it sort of get to me too
control
much.
You. Yeah.
And similar with the boos of the crowds, like you shouldn't really get to it, let it get to you. I think there's something else at play there with Djokovic. I think he knows. You know, there was. I think he knows that the, you know, the top players at the moment, Sinner, world number one. The Italian and also Alcaraz are more athletic than him and 17 years his junior. And I think he knows this is the end. And there was reports that he had a knee operation, but Djokovic doesn't really do operations. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't do, it doesn't do anything that isn't like really necessary for his body, such as, you know, he didn't take any vaccines or anything like that. And there was a whole thing about that, right? But so there was pictures of him in crutches after a tournament with his knee in a brace. And it was as if to say, this photo means I took an operation. But actually, he wasn't. He was just in crutches, right? To give his knee a break, right? But he didn't take an operation. And now he's trying to do a Grand Slam tournament again. And he's won the most in the world. But I think he knows. I think he knows that he's on the way out. I think this is his sort of fighting way to sort of try and stay in it, but it just came out in the wrong way yesterday. But, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, the big four in tennis, there's been a lot of documentation of them leaving the sport. Amazon Prime did the last 12 days, released on the 20th of June for Roger Federer, and Murray got a send-off this week as well. And Nadal sort of semi-half retired at the French Open, but he didn't have a party. So it's kind of like they're on the way out. But clearly, like, it's just, you know, it is a tricky one. And, you know, the other commentary around this thing, Ali Habib, the CEO of Angami, shared this post on LinkedIn yesterday from someone else in the region, a commentator who I didn't know before, but we'll look up his stuff. But basically, this industry professional in the region referenced Joe Biden, and he brought up this point about knowing when it's time to retire. Mm-hmm. And he basically, you know, we've all seen the analysis about Joe Biden, but no one yet, until I read this post, which is really interesting, has referenced it to the region, right? There's been presidents, and I assume this individual is Lebanese, I think he is, but, you know, the Lebanon haven't had a president for 2 or 3 years now, but at the time they had a president who kept getting reelected, and he was very elderly, right? And I think what they're trying to say is that you can have dignity, you don't have to hang on. Is it about power? Is it about knowing when to go? Is it sort of thing? And it makes us think about succession and legacy. It makes us think about, like, are we really the best people for the job? Is age just a number? And you can relate that to Biden. You can relate that to Novak Djokovic. You can relate that to CEOs in the region, different things like that. But I think it's really interesting when we think of it. Are people staying on because they have experience? Are they staying on because they can't find a successor? Are they staying on because it's, you know, they've liked the power of it? I know the media references, there's a big M&A deal going on at the moment for Paramount, which is the famous studio in the US that has Titanic and many others. And that used to be under the Redstones, Sumner originally, and he passed a few years ago, and his daughter, Sherry, now runs it. And she's in her 70s, and it's loss-making, per se. It's got lots of debt. I don't know if it's loss-making, but it's got, you know, about $12 billion in debt. And there's two people vying to buy it, two entities vying to buy it. And she had the deal done, and then in the last minute in the boardroom, she said, no, I don't want to let go of my crown jewels. And she said no, and she wobbled, and now it's going back again, and they're trying to sweeten the deal. But it's kind of like, they're kind of saying, hey, let us do it now. Yeah. And, you know, she is getting a good price for it. But so it's just all these things. There's many anecdotes, there's many stories, and, you know, people will reference different things about people holding on to things. You know, I for one, do like the idea of extending, not retiring early and things like that. I do think it's important for people if they have the capacity to
continue.
Yeah,
I mean, we know like for Novak that he got frustrated because he did say that he has won the championship 7 times before, and people were like kind of like doubting him. So I think honestly, like if I was him, I would be as well kind of like annoyed because like, hey, like what are you guys talking about? I won this like 7 times before. So what is this thing that you guys are having or holding against me?
Yeah, exactly. But he's never been the biggest supported player. Like he's always had a bit of this, but I think, you know, the interviewer trying to save the reputation of Wimbledon is like, no, maybe they weren't. And he turned around and he said, I've been on the tour 20 years. I know all the tricks. I know what they were doing. Don't disrespect me, you know? But yeah, we can earn respect in different ways. There's no doubt that Novak's one of the greatest players of all time, mentally and technically. He's won the most Grand Slams, and facts speak for themselves. But it's the same with Ronaldo. Like, people love to boo Ronaldo, and they love to trigger him. You know, when he was in Abu Dhabi in earlier this year, he got sent off. He got triggered by something as well. You know, so people do love to boo him and love to write him off. But this is just, I guess, sometimes the price that what goes with being successful, being the top of your game.
I mean, you know, like when you're being successful, there are always people that are cheering for you and people that are booing for you. But we know with Novak, because people are mainly like, they know there are advocates for, I would say, Nadal, right? Nadal. And that's why, you know what I mean? I feel like it's a kind of like a competition between him and Federer as well. Nadal.
Yeah, and Murray was there at the time
and
as well.
And they love him more than Novak.
Yeah, it's kind of, it is interesting. Yeah, you all have your fans in sport.
Yes.
Like in Formula One at the moment, Max Verstappen is the outspoken one. He sort of he says things to interviewers. You know, he's the best at the moment and everything, but at the weekend he lost, and all the English media loved it because they had four English Formula One drivers in the grid, and I think three on the pole before the race. But of course, Lewis then won the race at Silverstone at the weekend, and you know that's the English media will love this, but because they like to sort of knock down Max. But anyway,
well, who's your favorite
Formula One
between like Novak, Federer and
Nadal? Over the years, I respect them all. I respect them all. I kind of liked Novak for a while. I respect them all. My favorite now is Alcaraz. Sinner's excellent, but I've liked Alcaraz for a few years, and I got to interview him in Abu Dhabi recently at the Mubadala Tennis Championship, and you know, we've had him on this show actually, not the show, the Love and Dubai show. That's a good point. We actually did have him on the show. So I like Alcaraz, but I also hope that he doesn't sort of get sucked into all the media attention. I hope that he stays focused. He's a real fighter, though, and he's got all the shots. He's excellent.
I mean, Alcaraz, you know, his idol was Nadal. So, which is honestly very interesting. I mean, tennis is a beautiful sport.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And Novak actually put a tweet out recently. saying that it's dying, it's in danger, you know. And I thought of this, like, if you drive around Dubai now, or if you look up, you don't see many tennis courts, but you see paddle places everywhere.
That's true.
And even in Riyadh and places like that, like, you know, and the business analysis was that you can put 3 paddle courts for the price of 1 tennis court, and you can book them out a lot more. So the commercial incentive to open paddle clubs versus tennis is higher and higher. It's a real danger. And they have the similar issue in the US because they have pickleball, which is a version of paddle.
Yeah,
it's just a different style, but it's basically the same size court. So they have the same economic and conundrum. And that's why Saudi, when they were putting in the bid, a couple of billion, I think you and I discussed it previously for the for the, I think the ATP or the WTA are they're going to create their own one. Mm-hmm. And yeah, definitely tennis is in a bit of a pickle. No pun intended for pickleball.
Well, that's, I would say it's a very interesting talk about tennis and sports, but let's jump to our stories for today. Dubai's 20-minute city vision drives metro expansion to 140 stations. So the Dubai Metro expansion plans aim to significantly improve transportation efficiency and urban by increasing stations from 64 to 96 by 2030 and further to 140 by 2040. Now, this initiative is part of the 20-minute city concept, which, by the way, I'm so excited for it. It seeks to reduce commute times, alleviate traffic congestion, and enhance accessibility to essential services within neighborhoods. I honestly am very excited for this because, you know, with Dubai and the traffic and so on, 20 minutes seems the perfect time to reach anywhere.
Yeah, I think when they were building the line originally in Neom, it was mentioned as a 15 or 20-minute city, which, you know, is a nice catchphrase. But I think in reality, there's always going to be traffic and the city is getting bigger. You know, metros originally, you know, people who build them and involved in them know how big a project they are. Like, there's a metro that's half built in Cairo. There's one that isn't ready yet in Riyadh, but Dubai one works. $4.95 billion, 18 billion dirham is not an insignificant amount of cash to be building out. Willy Chahabi on the show last week on Wednesday talked about this, and he just basically talked that before it was sort of built on Sheikh Zayed Road, and now Dubai has developed so much. Rafari basically gave the reference that on his app, Keeper, property, prop tech app that Willy, the CEO and founder of, he basically said they did some research and they said that the number of units by community, Dubai Marina used to be the, by units, not by size or residence, it had 29,000 units and JVC now has 32,000 and JVC doesn't have public transport. It's maybe buses, but it doesn't have a metro link. So this is really interesting point, and it's great to see the city develop, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, as well, we've heard about how millionaires are going to be joining the country, the UAE as a whole, which is very exciting. A lot of businesses are open for everyone. And so, I mean, honestly, at this point, if I use the metro a lot. However, I do struggle sometimes with, like, hey, the destination I want to go to does not have a metro station that it's linked to. And I think, honestly, like, they are going to be providing a metro station for everywhere, which is very, I would say, essential.
Absolutely.
And cool. And it will be really good for everyone who is, you know, commuting around. And jumping to our next story, so Saudi's vision of 2030 boosted by all-time high of $753 billion in liquidity. So the Saudi Arabia's liquidity levels grew significantly, reaching $753 billion, which equals to 222 billion Saudi riyal, and that was by May 2024, and it has marked an annual increase of 8.6% from the previous year since January 2024, and the liquidity has risen up to 4%, supporting the economic activities by Saudi gold, which is very exciting.
Yeah, there's loads of analysis and projections of Saudi. They always say about oil price linked to government budget surplus and deficit that has to be a certain amount and things like that. It's just economic commentary around Saudi budgets. I think despite the strong liquidity, Saudi actually posted a budget deficit of 12.3 billion riyals, which is $3.3 billion in the first quarter of 2024, attributed to lower revenues, oil revenues, but non-oil revenues are a slight increase. There's analysis of how are they going to fund the giga projects. Mm-hmm. You know, PIF has invested in many diverse portfolio of things around the world. They've tapped the Sukuk or the bond market to get a lot of extra cash in. They've moved some of Aramco's percentage onto PIF. They've paid dividends into that way. But, you know, FDI, foreign direct investment, a lot of financial instruments are needed to fund, you know, the giga projects. But yeah, I mean, it's healthy, right? Like, the Sukuks are being raised, the bonds are being raised. They're doing road shows, like you mentioned yesterday or the day before that. The CEO, the chairperson of Aramco, spoken on a tour recently, saying that you'd be foolish not to buy Aramco shares. So there is demand for these things. They're tapping all different areas for funding, and you need stimulus. You need investment. You know, we're talking about the metro line and the investment. Like that $5 billion has to come from somewhere to build a metro. And then what happens out of that is that jobs and commerce build on top of that, and it's similar in Saudi. So, but budgets are good in Saudi. I think they obviously want the oil price to stay relatively high, but the fact that their liquidity is at an all-time high is a positive sign.
It is, because this as well, by the way, like, it aims to diversify its community, economy, and as well create jobs, as you said, and attract foreign investment, which is what we have seen His Highness King Salman say and urge people to actually invest in Aramco.
Yeah,
which is really cool. And I would say, like, because they all the time talk about their 2030 vision, because they do have a lot of projects, and all of these projects have been increasing, and it's borrowing to boost liquidity and support the country's economic transformation.
Exactly.
Which is very exciting. So jumping to our last story, Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump again.
President-elect Donald Trump, former President Donald Trump, and his son, really, who runs this entity, right?
Yes. I mean, have you seen the debate between him and Joe Biden?
I saw the aftermath of it.
Entertaining. It's really entertaining. He is so smart, and you can tell that he does have a business mindset. Well, of course, if he has a business mindset, his children must have as well business mindsets. Yeah. They must have grown up with that.
Trump's dad was in real estate, and that's how he got into it.
Yes. Oh, really? Yeah.
We talked about this last week with Waleed as well, about the Trump Tower in Jeddah, that and why he's building it with Daryl Akan and the reputation management and stuff like that. But basically, there's more. You've got more news about the wider Trump property organization in the Middle East.
So Eric Trump announces family's expansion plans in the Middle East. You guys, this is so exciting. The Trump Organization, led by Donald Jr. and Eric Trump, is partnering with Saudi Arabian company Dar Global. Yes, sorry, I thought it was like Dar Global to launch a luxury resort in Oman and build a Trump Tower in Jeddah. Now, Trump already operates a golf course in Dubai with local developer Damac. However, these dealings pose a conflict of interest if Trump is re-elected, especially given Oman's role in negotiations with Iran and U.S. efforts to encourage Saudi Arabia to normalize relations with Israel. Which I think, honestly, if Trump is re-elected, what would you expect if Trump is re-elected out of Trump's business and real estate market?
Similar to last time. I think, they'll run it the same way. I think some of the quotes from Donald Trump Jr. Allude to the fact that even now, Donald Trump Jr. is here, even when Trump isn't president. So they'll just run it separately. Trump Sr. will step away from the management of the property business, and his family and son will manage it. So they'll run it the same. I think we were unsure beforehand. And I think there was a lot of conversation around the time when Mike Bloomberg was running for president. You know, how would he run Bloomberg and the presidency? And I think if you step away from it, but then how do you fully step away from it? But if you step away from it and you're not involved in decision making, if you're not taking a salary, if you're 9 to 5, although, you know, in theory, like if your job and your salary is to be president of the United States, then that's your job. And you can't be running a property conglomerate at the same time. But yeah, it seems like the Trump property development group is run by Donald Trump Jr. at the moment.
I actually honestly agree with you, because in response to the conflict, Eric Trump told the Financial Times, "I don't personally deal with foreign governments." Additionally, he stated, saying, "I'm not the one walking into a local municipal building to get a permit for a golf club." Which I think, honestly, at this point, I am really impressed by Donald Trump and his children in the real estate market. And I think of them, they maybe deal with politics as like in a businessy way rather than in a politics way, which is what makes them really successful.
Yeah,
do you think he's going to get reelected?
you know, there's like, I think, you know, the common thing to say for business people traveling the world this year is, oh, X billion people in the world are going to the polls, therefore, blah, blah, blah. But I think we get caught up in this mm-hmm. thing too much, you know, and it just, you know, just because the amount of elections that are taking place around the world this year, if you add up the total population in those countries, it becomes a 4 billion figure. But the turnout in Iran last week was 40%. Sure. The turnout in the US is going to be less. The eligibility to vote is over 18, et cetera, et cetera. So I just think we get preoccupied. Like, I look at all business people in the US now picking one or the other candidates. And obviously it's important. And obviously, you know, decisions that politicians make have an impact on business people. But just, you know, just get on with your job, you know, like, yeah. You know, if we were preoccupied with what the health ministry are doing, do we have to have an opinion on what drugs are regulated or how hospitals are regulated? No, there's specialists for that. That's there's true. Ministries for that. I just think sometimes people should just stay in their lane and, you know, like, not wax vocally all the time about things they have no view on and no real reason to have a view on. And they can argue that, yes, it is important, but how important is it? Like, there is going to be ramifications, absolutely. But if you focus on you and you build you and you do you, then you know, it doesn't really matter what's happening.
It does not matter. But people are very entitled to their own opinions. And when they are entitled, they feel like that they have the freedom of speech, specifically in the United States, and they are there like, hey, I want to say my opinion, and they do.
There's an opportunity cost to speaking, Farah. There's an opportunity cost to saying your opinion. Of course you're entitled to it, but it's a waste of time. It's a waste of time and energy, and they get caught up in it, you know? And Western media and Western and US elections dominate the chat around the world. Why should it? You know, it's just one country.
So I agree.
You know, our headline was that Trump are doing developments in the region, and they're not even one of the good ones. You know, we've got better developers here.
Of course,
so you keep know, trying, Donald Trump Jr., but there's better developers here than what you've got.
I mean, I agree with you, honestly. You know, but I mean, Dubai is Dubai. You know, a lot of great developers are here, and more will be coming.
Absolutely.
And more buildings and more communities will be opening and doing so. But
absolutely.
This brings us to the end of the show. Thank you so much, Rich. I honestly really enjoyed talking to you today and every day.
Thanks, Farah.
You guys, this brings us to the end of the show.
So once again, big shout out to the Smashy Business newsletter. We had all these stories in more detail. I read them this morning, and it's a nice succinct way if you don't have 40 minutes to listen to the show. We are available on all podcasts, Apple, Angami, Spotify. We're also live on YouTube and on the Smashy TV streaming service.
Bye-bye.